Welcome to Frankly Speaking on the TurfNet Radio Network. Here's your host, Dr. Frank Rossi.
Welcome to Frankly Speaking. I'm Frank Rossi. I'm on the faculty at Cornell University, the land-grant institution for the state of New York and the College of Agriculture. And one of the missions of the College of Agriculture at Cornell University, and as many of my land-grant scientist colleagues share, is the importance of extending the research and the science that is conducted at the university and stewarding it to and crafting a message so that positive change occurs in society. And I am pleased to be on our topic today, which I believe is right in the wheelhouse of that particular aspect of our functioning, with my guest as well, also a scientist at the land-grant institution in Florida. And so what I can say before we get to Professor Unruh and talk about best management practices, which is that topic that really sort of resonating now in our golf turf industry in a way that I've never seen happen on a national level. And Brian's work in Florida and many of the scientists around the country that have been working on this have really sort of brought it to the point now where our industry can get behind science-based efforts. So what are BMPs? Where are we going? So I got my PhD in the early 1990s, and immediately when I was on the faculty at Michigan State, saw the intersection of citizens' concern for the environment, promulgation for regulations, you know, they're enacting regulations, and then how the industry had to adapt to it, and wished that, boy, wouldn't it be great if we could be involved in the formulation of policy that then we could translate into practice in a much more reasonable way. And I believe that same thinking is what lies at the heart of best management practices that are founded around water quality protection and the Clean Water Act from the 70s. We're going to talk a number of these topics, and you're going to hear Brian expound upon his great article from Golf Course Management in January, right before the conference, the initiative to develop these BMPs in 50 states by 2020. And so partly what I see our role here today is to sort of help encourage those superintendents to understand more about this and then get more involved. And with that as a backdrop, I welcome Professor of Environmental Horticulture and Associate Director of the West Florida Research and Education Center, Brian Unruh. Brian, thanks for joining us. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to hear your voice, and you're coming in loud and clear, which is really good, seeing as you're in Florida and I'm in the hills of central New York. Brian, I don't want to waste a minute in here. You have been in Florida for 20 years or more now, and you know this has really become something you're spending your day-to-day work on. It didn't start out that way. How did it get that way? How did it get that way that you're spending more and more time on this particular issue of water quality and water quantity issues in the state of Florida?
Well, sure. Thanks, Frank. You know, when I came to Florida, I probably would have never guessed that I would have spending so much time on BMPs. But that is where we are today. And all states, you'd referenced the Clean Water Act of 1970s, and you know, and that federal legislation then was pushed down to the states, and each state has to assess their water quality standards that are out there. And, you know, for many years, the states kind of just, lumbered along and didn't do a whole lot. And then through some activism and different, lawsuits that were filed, it prompted the states to really advance and move forward on this. And, Florida, if anybody's ever been to Florida, most people have, we have a lot of water in Florida. And a lot of water. And so
and a lot of water close to the surface, too. A lot of water close to the surface.
You know, and a lot of people, most people, they think of Florida. They think of our theme attractions in Orlando or Tampa. And, I'm based, you introduced me as being from the West Florida Research and Education Center. And I'm located between the middle of nowhere, north of Pensacola. But Florida is a huge state. I'm 8 hours drive time from Orlando. And I joke, you know, I could almost be in Iowa before I could be in Homestead, Florida, if I started driving. And so all this huge state, all these water issues were going on. And the fact that you said, you know, we have a lot of water that's near the surface, shallow water tables. And so consequently, Florida really, you know, jumped out ahead of a lot of states when it comes to water quality issues. And obviously, Florida has a lot of springs. You know, last year, our Florida legislature passed just an enormous number of laws designed to protect springs. Of course, springs.
Yeah, I see that in this article. You spend early on the Florida Springs and Aquifer Protection Act. So I would imagine that's the latest iteration of a pile of laws that have come around that are touching the turf industry, the kinds of things we do like irrigation, the kinds of things we do with nutrient management. That's where these sorts of things like the Florida Springs and Aquifer Protection Act sort of restrict us. Is that a fair statement?
It does. And interesting. So in the state of Florida, we have the Department of Ag and Consumer Services, and then we have the Department of Environmental Protection. Well, historically, all BMPs that were related to agriculture, and we grow 240, or we produce 240 commodities in the state of Florida. And so all of your ag-related type BMPs, those are promulgated, they're pushed down through the Department of Ag. Well, then your urban BMPs come through the other side of the regulatory environment, and that's the Department of Environmental Protection. Well, historically, FDEP, they never pushed BMPs from a standpoint of adopting them by rule, meaning that there's legislative action behind those BMPs. They tended to, just kind of philosophically, they tended to regulate through the permitting process. And so if you wanted to go build a golf course, of course, you got to pull all your various permits. And essentially, you know, a permit in that sense, it's a license to pollute, you know, candidly speaking. And they quantify those values. And so, you know, we have 1,300 golf courses in Florida, and they are all permitted. And then, you know, if you go to pull a consumptive water use permit, you know, you want to be able to pump water, you have to be permitted. And so DEP has handled their kind of side of the equation through the permitting process. Well, this legislation that was passed last year, the legislature has come in and is basically forcing the hand of DEP to adopt BMPs by rule in some manner. And so in Florida, the golf course BMP that we have and our green industry BMPs, which that is what kind of provides some guidance to the lawn care industry, those two documents have never been adopted by rule. They just were out there as just guidance tools, I guess, so to speak,
had developed, right? I mean, the key here is it looks like you guys had gone to the effort of trying to create statements that were science-based and sort of the industry, you believed that was sort of a code of environmental standards that working with the industry you developed that they accepted, but it was never made a law or adopted as a rule. Because at some point, I guess these were voluntary. And now I'm assuming you're saying they moved from voluntary to mandatory, which I guess makes you feel good, Brian, that you spent the time developing science-based standards, because then at least they could be practical. Because as I recall, didn't Florida pass some funky fertilizer restriction laws that you actually couldn't apply fertilizer during the growing season, that it had to be applied at times when the grass wasn't growing, which maybe I got that wrong, but that sounds like a pretty hokey thing. You're sort of glad you got some science behind these things when they made them mandatory, I bet.
Well, let's unpack that a little bit. You know, the whole in Florida in the, and I'll just use the umbrella, kind of the green industry. So that is truly our landscape and our golf. We actually have sod, but we're the only state of all 50 states that we actually have a dedicated sod production BMP manual that falls under our Department of Ag. That is adopted by rule. But if we go back to really the late 1990s. So shortly after I got here, we had this flawed ordinance that popped up over around Jacksonville, Florida. And it was that ordinance that popped up that started having these restrictive periods in there. Obviously through the industry and kind of a turmoil. And so the industry partnered with University of Florida and Department of Environmental Protection to develop what we now have as the Green Industry BMPs. And so it was really kind of a coming together of everybody to make these things happen. Dr. Mike Thomas, who at the Golf Industry Show you had an opportunity to interview, he was really the key guy at our Department of Environmental Protection that made a lot of this really come to fruition. And so he really gets a lot of the credit for being the taskmaster in there, so to speak, that kept us pushing forward. Now, so the Green Industry BMP came out, and then it just kind of floated along there and for a number of years. And then there were just some additional threats and even moved past some threats. There was some really some legal action that was taken by some of the environmental activism groups that then kind of forced the hand. And then Florida had this big fertilizer review process, and there were some representatives on that from the university, from some of the major fertilizer manufacturers were on this task force, but it was a government appointee, a governor appointed task force. And that task force came out, and a couple things came as a result of that. One was we actually have laws now that dictate how much nitrogen and phosphorus can go in a bag of fertilizer that is on the retail shelves. So, you know, your box stores, and so that was put into place, and then also a law was passed in the state of Florida that requires every fertilizer applicator in the state of Florida, whoever has their hand touching the spreader, that person has to be trained under the Green Industry BMPs. And then once they have their training and they successfully complete the training and pass the test, then they apply for a fertilizer license, just like a pesticide license. And so you maintain the fertilizer license with continuing education credits that are provided by some industry, but largely by the University of Florida. And so that kind of was brewing over there when the Green Industry document was kind of wrapped up and got pushed out there. Then we turned our focus on the golf BMP, and that again was a partnership with DEP, University of Florida, and then the industry folks came together to really put this document together.
And that's where I want to thanks for unpacking that 3-minute thing I said into something most people could understand. That's, I don't know why people keep listening to this show, because I feel like sometimes I make things more confusing. But I will say my own experience, and when I hear you talking about the BMPs, for those people that are listening and not, you know, having adopted them, or maybe I know many states, I'm getting a number of calls from states, I'm sure you are, and had a fair amount of interaction at the conference, they're embarking on this. I'd like you to comment for a second, Brian. When I hear, and I know what was successful for us, when you say Mike Thomas was key, right? When you say the academic, your role as an academic is there. You have the industry willing and at the table, willing to do things. That one of the successes of making this happen to me seems like that open dialogue, and the fact that Mike Thomas reached out for you guys and then started to hold you accountable, and that you were there as a technical resource to provide the science, and the industry guys are saying, yeah, you could say that, but you know, we're not really there yet. At least they know where this is going. I gotta believe that partnership does two things. One is make some practical outcomes, and second, you know, change the relationship with our regulatory bodies from an adversarial relationship to a mutual respectful relationship. Are those two things that are important about those relationships, Mike? I'm sorry, Brian. The partnerships and the science that each bring, and then the change in the character of the relationship from adversarial to more cooperative.
Sure. And so when all this came together, you know, in some of those early meetings, they were, you know, there was controversy in there. You know, sometimes candidly, the industry, you know, resists some change. And one of the things, and I guess it's really, it's driving my ship today, is in the turf world for the better part of my career, we tend to have kind of agronomic practices. And, you know, what does it take to grow grass? What does it take to maintain cover on putting greens or tees or athletic fields? And those recommendations have been largely uncoupled from environmental impact. And so when we started in doing a lot of this work and started looking, you know, there's that happy medium where, and we don't need as much nitrogen as you know, maybe we've been putting on in the past to maintain, you know, this level of play. You know, and some of the recommendations that are still made are contrary to, you know, sound science. So you referenced, you know, these fertilizer ordinances here in Florida. We're dealing with over 90 of them in the state now. Even with BMPs in place that really kind of come out of our regulatory environment, we still have 90 plus ordinances across the state. Most of those ordinances, except for the most recent couple of them, have these summertime restrictive periods. And most of those originated, these flawed ordinances originated from a little sentence that was taken out of context in a publication that we have where it says, don't fertilize when rain is imminent. Well, to the practitioner, you know, if you go outside and it looks like it's about to rain, don't fertilize. And that was the intention. Well, some of the kind of misinformed or whoever, they took that statement. They said, well, in the rainy season of Florida, rain is imminent every day. And so 90 ordinances across the state, most of them disallow any fertilizer application between the month of May and October. And so consequently, in the middle of the growing season.
Yeah, I know. And that's, you know, sort of what I remembered, Brian. And listen, I'm laughing because I want to take a break. And you provided the perfect opportunity for us to segue to a message from our sponsors. And I'm with Professor Brian Unruh. And Brian, the reason I want to take this break is sort of the way you characterized, you know, the way these decisions get made sometimes. And you say you have 90 fertilizer laws in the state of Florida. I always like when there's one time on the show when guys are happy they're golf superintendents and not land grant scientists that have to sort of manage that set of myriad mash dog's dish of fertilizer regulations. So, Brian, when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation and move to the science part of the discussion and the importance of that science and where the recommendations and the gaps might exist. I'm Frank Rossi. We're talking, frankly speaking, here with Professor Brian Unruh at the University of Florida, and we'll be right back.
Golf course superintendents all agree. Traditional core aeration is time-consuming, labor-intensive, and unpopular with golfers. Dryject is a revolutionary service that relieves compaction, increases water infiltration, improves gas exchange, and amends your root zone all at the same time, leaving the turf surface smooth and immediately playable. Best of all, an independent Dryject service professional does it for you, there and gone before you know it. Dryject, the only process in the world that aerates, top dresses, and amends in one pass. Visit dryject.com to locate your nearest Dryject service center.
Welcome back to Frankly Speaking. I'm Frank Rossi at Cornell University, chatting today with Professor Brian Unruh at the University of Florida. And Brian, where we left off, you know, one of the things I heard you talk about there was sort of, you know, what science says and how things can be taken out of context, the importance of having these science-based BMPs. And off air and on air, we've alluded to this, but I want to go back and talk with you for a second about when you started to formulate these statements, whether it was for sod or for the lawn care industry or for the golf guys, you noticed that certain statements you were making, well, boy, how much nitrogen does it take to keep a lawn decent? You know, we have historical recommendations. Do we have refined recommendations? Talk to me about, you know, what, you know, states can expect when they embark on some of these things as they engage their land grant institution, which I hope all of them do in one way, shape, or form, and I know you'd recommend it, that what is the process of, you know, going through identifying these statements and then saying, okay, boy, we don't really have the science for this. I can't imagine those were easy conversations when you were sitting around having them.
You know, they weren't. And one of the things, and I guess, is, you know, as a university scientist, you understand this. You know, we spend a huge amount of our time soliciting dollars, you know, to conduct our research programs. And so there's always kind of this thing in the back of your mind, you know, looking for those researchable areas. And so that's kind of going in the back of my mind. And then in Florida, we have a Florida statute that defines what a best management practice is. And it says right there in that, based on research, field testing, and expert review. And so I came back, you know, and the team of us here in Florida, when we were developing the green industry BMPs, is, you know, a lot of these statements were going into this document, and so we simply cannot substantiate those. We can't verify or validate those because there isn't any science, especially, you know, in Florida's unique environment. You know, I've got, I think, what, 6 or 7, you know, hardiness zones in the state of Florida. We go from, you know, Miami, that's a 12-month growing season, to Pensacola, which is a 7-month growing season, from deep sands to, you know, the soils that are actually heavier here in the panhandle. And so part of that process, we're sitting over there taking notes, you know, here's a gap, here's a gap, here's a gap, there's a gap. And then we, just because of this relationship we had with the Department of Environmental Protection, we went back and it took several years of nurturing that. But that resulted in an 8-year, $4.5 million research project that was conducted at our 3 major turf facilities, you know, across the state of Florida. And so that filled a lot of the voids and the gaps in the information. A lot of that work has been published over the last couple of years. And I'm doing the same thing, really. You know, we're working on sod production BMPs. In fact, literally this morning I met with the Department of Ag folks, and we were discussing, you know, some of the BMP statements that are in there that simply cannot be really corroborated because we don't have the evidence. We don't have the data, you know, to back up or to refute some of these statements. And so we, you know, naturally the conversation segued into, well, how do we go out and, you know, and get some funding to do this type of work? And so the research has been key, you know, in this whole process. And I think it comes back to the fact that in Florida statutes, I have a definition, and the regulatory agencies are bound to that definition. And so, to be candid, I'm going to exploit it.
Well, and not only that, but I would say this, you know, one of the things that I struggle with, Brian, and I'm sure you do as well, anytime, you know, this topic came up in New York about 10 years ago at a board meeting that I was sitting at with the turf industry here in New York, and a member of the industry said, hey, we should have these BMPs. I said, oh, really? And I had known what you were doing and what, you know, what BMPs actually meant. I said, you know what? Here's what BMP statements are. Are you guys going to like these things? And they're, oh, well, you know, it's going to aggravate this person and aggravate that person. And one of the things that they fear the most, at least feared the most here in New York, is, well, what's going to stop them from making this legislation? And it sounds like it's exactly what's happened in Florida, that they've made it rule. But I think what you're describing here with this particular definition is an area where, when thoughtfully approached, can be used to our advantage. Okay, you want us to have these things? You better help us figure this out. because we're a big part of the economy here in Florida, and you better give us some public money to figure out how to do this. Otherwise, there's no motivation for us, or you put us all out of business, and that's going to be a pretty big hit to this industry, never mind how bad the landscapes are going to look in Florida. So it was very interesting that you looked at that and used it to your advantage. It typically is what the industry is afraid of. Have you had to deal with that fear, Brian, that along the way, well, you know, gosh, we don't want to say that because what happens if they make it law?
Sure. That's been a big deal. You know, and I elaborate on this in the article you referenced in the January issue of Golf Course Management. But you know, we Florida Golf Course Superintendents got a phone call last year. Their executive director, and there were 40 golf courses that are kind of in the central part of the state over on the Gulf Coast, that region over there. And the regulatory official referenced those 40 golf courses as being point source polluters, not non-point source polluters, but point source, which is akin to a pipe sticking out of a factory and polluting a water body. And so the pucker factor went way up in a real hurry. And so we convened a meeting with the regulatory folks, and we went in, and they're just doing their job. So the Clean Water Act requires, you know, 1972 requires the states to assess all their water. Well, they're doing that. And so that part of Florida happens to be the Springs Coast. And so now, you know, they've got a bigger issue there with all this legislation. Well, they have gone in and they have determined through their models and stuff, they know exactly the land area of those 40 golf courses. And then they've plugged in, you know, numbers, which they've not shared with me yet, but they've plugged in numbers and they have computed the load of pollution that is coming from those 40 golf courses. And so, you know, they know where that it's coming from septic tanks. They know it's coming from cattle operations. They know that information. Now we can sit there and think that they don't know it, but you know, it's government. They know it. And so, I have the, you know, the GIS maps and that show all this. And so we sit down with them and they're tasked to address this pollution. And so they are meeting with all of the various contributors to the pollution and saying, what are you doing about it? Well, then we introduce them to, ironically, their program. The golf manual is paid for by DEP. And so this is one of those cases where you have big agency, right hand, left hand, doesn't necessarily know what each other's doing. And so we introduced the manual, and then we took them a step further and said, you know, and by the way, you know, 4 years ago, we established a certification program that requires, you know, 7 hours of education. And then golf industry personnel then take an exam, and they must pass, you know, the exam, all three sections of the exam to be certified. And then that certification lasts for 4 years, and then they maintain the certification through continuing ed. And we got up from the meeting, and they said, this is excellent. And they checked the box, and so they are okay with what we're doing. Now, fast forward a few months past that. That is after all this legislation on the Springs issue passed, some more. They came back off the department came back to the golf industry and said, you know, they've just passed this law. We have got to basically adopt these BMPs by rule. How do y'all think would be the best way to implement those BMPs to meet our objectives, but not be overly burdensome to you? And so we laid out, here's the plan. And so it's one of those where, and we can stick our head in the sand and say, you know, they're never going to touch us, or we can be very proactive and move forward. But either way, it's going to happen.
Yeah, and it's just, and I think I like when there are harbingers of these things nationally, right? I mean, you and I I certainly used, and I saw you use it in the article, what we've learned from green industry responses to the drought in California. And I've had a number of conversations with Mike Huck, one of the leading voices on water for the turf industry out in the West. And you allude to that in here. Florida is that harbinger, I believe, as the Chesapeake Bay is, even closer to home for me, that sort of harbinger of, you know, this is how far this can go. The extent that they're going to want to regulate these things. And the argument that you have to make, and, you know, it's bite hard on it, Brian, sometimes. But it's pay me now or pay me later. Either way, we're going to face some reality, some... I look at it like the continued desire of society to have everything transparent. And, you know, they're going to get around to us eventually because we use fertilizer, we use water, we use pesticides, and we're doing it right in their backyards and where they recreate. So anybody, I mean, I've certainly been yakking about this for 30 years in my role. I see what you're doing as the manifestation of it, but here's the rub, right? This is what I keep coming back to. You and I know about the restrictions of phosphorus in Minnesota. Now there's restriction of pesticides in Ontario. Now they're starting to get data. Are there changes in water quality or water quantity as a result of putting these BMPs or some restrictions into place? Obviously, I don't know that the word's all out yet for the phosphorus ban. I don't think I've heard anything earth-shattering yet that it's had some measurable reductions. I could be wrong about that. I've seen recently that they are finding some reductions on, you know, 2,4-D and dicamba and MCPP on streams in the Ontario, Canada area. Where are you guys at now with really either being pressed for measuring a change or where you're actually studying and seeing a change?
So I think – so there's this lag period. So – you know, in Florida, New York, I mean, kind of led the way on BMP development and all that. And that's one thing. So you have to have these resource materials and the guides and all that. They have to be in place. But it's that next step. It's coming back and making sure that the BMPs are doing what they say they're doing. And that's where we are. And that's not easy to do. And it's well beyond my subject matter. I mean, I grow grass and so at UF, I'm turning the corner now that, you know, the GCSA BMP planning guide and template has been launched, and we're going to turn our focus here in Florida. And I'm partnering with some folks at UF. We have a public issues education group that they're on the social science side of things. And I guess, you know, they know how to ask questions in a manner that, you know, gets to the answer that needs to be known. But, you know, I'm concerned. You know, I know that superintendents sit in on our training. They pass the test. But I'm not sure. Well, we're not at a point where we can go back and say that as a result of attending this training, that they A, are implementing the BMPs, and B, are they having intermeasurable impact on water quality or water quantity?
And you're right. Those are complicated questions, and you know it is a two-parter, right? I think Eric Irvin is also playing around at Virginia Tech, trying to measure water quality differences in some ways. But I'm with you a little bit, to a certain extent. You know, we wrote these things 4 or 5 years ago here in New York, and I got to tell you, it's just the beginning of the process when you write them. Now it's a matter of, you know, implementation, and what is there new science that's leading us in one direction that we thought it was another direction. I find ourselves now enhancing our BMPs with a pollinator section because guys want to look at environmental stewardship from a broad perspective, but it's verifying that they're doing it. You're saying even though you're certifying them, they got to sit for a test and do recertification, which is one way of verifying it. I would imagine, is it every golf course has done this yet? I imagine they have to if they want to put fertilizer out, right?
No. So, and this is where it's been very positive. So in these 99 ordinances that we have across Florida, golf has been exempted from every single one of them. There was one that got close. And I'll tell you, if a golf course loses the ability to fertilize between the months of May and October, might as well close up shop. And so, but so far we've, golf industry, and we point to the BMP, we point to the training program. And so, consequently, you know, surprisingly, the majority of golf course superintendents in the state of Florida are not certified. I'm doing a training next week in Fort Lauderdale, and we have two additional trainings on the books for this summer. But we're not even at 50% yet. And so, here's the deal. So this legislation that passed, Senate Bill 552, that passed last year, they met with the golf industry and myself and said, okay, how best can we implement this? What's going to happen under that law is it's going to push these BMPs from being voluntary to being mandatory. Now, here's an interesting twist. And so our BMP document, just like the one that's, you know, yours in New York or the GCSAA's BMP, we cover all kinds of topics. I mean, you just referenced pollinator protection. Well, if you look, you know, at the letter of the law in the state of Florida anyway, our Department of Environmental Protection, they really only have jurisdiction kind of over the water quality side of things. And so, you know, there's even was a big debate, you know, with the EPA and WOTUS, you know, the waters of the United States, whether that was an overreach. And so that'll all get shaken out at some point. But so what we ended up doing, what we've proposed, and this hasn't, you know, it's not been promulgated down yet, but we proposed that the DEP, and these are kind of key phrases, but they're going to adopt the golf BMP manual by reference. In other words, it's a reference book, just like you would have if you know any other book up on the bookshelf. It's adopted by reference, the book in its entirety. The nutrient management checklists that we have in the document, that is what will be adopted by rule. Now, nearly every golf course superintendent I've ever met is a record keeper. I mean, they write down. Sometimes it's, you know, on a napkin. Sometimes it is in a sophisticated computer program. But they're taking records. They're writing down when they last fertilized.
And, you know, that whole process is going to change, too. I think some of what this BMP things are about, Brian, is really documenting what you're doing. Back to that idea that society wants transparency. People who live next to those golf courses and people who draw water or boat in the recreational areas want to know what's happening on those landscapes now, I think, in a way they've never wanted to know before. So you're right about that.
We're in an era of big data. I don't know where this thing is going to go, but I agree with you. You know, people, and ironically, you know, especially here in Florida, we've seen some of the biggest antagonists to the golf industry in Florida are members of the very clubs that their actions are almost threatening the livelihood. And so a lot of our wealthy folks that, you know, spend their winter months in Florida, you know, are stroking huge checks to conservation groups who are really opposed to the idea that a golf course can be a good thing in the environment. And so it's an interesting twist that's there. And so
let me interrupt because we'll take one more break and then we'll come back and wrap it up in just a few minutes to really get on the ground with the people that want to do these BMPs in using the GCSA manual. Want to give them a little bit of a primer on sort of the way to get started, putting one foot in front of the other. I'm Frank Rossi. This is Frankly Speaking with Professor Brian Unruh, the University of Florida. We'll be right back.
Golf course superintendents, now you can aerate and fill 9 inches to 11 inches deep with minimal surface disruption and cleanup. The Maximus Deep Aeration Instant Fill Service from Dryject injects 1 pound of sand per square foot, 22 tons per acre, and leaves surfaces ready for play again in 1 hour. Best of all, Maximus by Dryject is only half the cost of alternative deep aeration and fill technologies. Visit MaximusAeration.com to locate your nearest Maximus by Dryject service center.
Welcome back to Frankly Speaking. I'm Frank Rossi at Cornell University with my friend Dr. Brian Unruh, professor at the University of Florida. And Brian, when we left, we're really, I think, done a wonderful job here of sort of contextualizing our experiences. And boy, you have just a wealth of experience with navigating the intersection of science and public policy. But ultimately, what brought this to the table is the GCSA's initiative to get this done, the funding that they've received, bringing you on board to do it. So in our few minutes left here, Brian, how would you summarize ways to get those states that don't have it? What are the steps they should take to get started? And what do you think are the keys to their success in getting this going?
All right. So for those that may not be completely familiar with what has gone on, I've been working with GCSAA over the last year, and then there's been a group of 18 folks that have served on this task force to really bring to the table a BMP planning guide and template with the goal of having golf-centric BMPs in all 50 states by the year 2020. And so Thursday morning at the Golf Industry Show just a couple weeks ago, we rolled out really kind of the how-to guide and then also unveiled the template. So my team, we wrote the content, compiled the content that's behind this magic curtain. GCSAA just absolutely knocked the magic curtain, that part of it, that what you see online, they just knocked it out of the ballpark. It is a phenomenal tool. From day one in this process, I have kind of had this guiding vision of when I was back in the year about 2001 or 2002, I guess it was, a group of us sat around the table at Grand Cypress Resort in Orlando, Florida, golf superintendents and DEP and myself and a USGA person, and basically tried to figure out how do we develop a golf-centric BMP for the state of Florida. And it took from 2002 really to 2007. It took 5 years to get this thing out the door. And so we wanted to avoid that 5 years because, you know, what we learned and what other states have learned. And so the very first step is to really go to gcsaa.org/BMP, and then you will see all kinds of resources that are there. And then you have to register to use the template. Now, the template at this point is not geared towards the individual superintendent developing a BMP for his or her facility. This is for, you know, the chapters in the various states to come together as a chapter or as a state to develop that state-level BMP. And so, obviously, get some people together, form a steering committee. And we have in this planning guide that is right there online, all of these steps walk you through, you know, what needs to be done. We discuss in this planning guide, you know, who should do what? How are you going to pay for this thing? You know, now there's GCSAA is funding to individual chapters grants to facilitate the development of these BMPs. We get in on that website, you'll see, you know, kind of the who, what, where, when, why, and how. And then, you know, we discuss how long does it take. Honestly, you know, you could jump into this thing and a group could really put this thing together if you just kind of imported everything that's there. I mean, within a couple months, easily. And so this whole tool walks you through, again, the who, what, where, when, why, and how as well. And so
And I guess I've heard it characterized, Brian, the online approach, I've heard it characterized as a sort of TurboTax approach to getting the BMPs at least codified for a state that then you can work on moving forward, either the way you want to refine them more closely for your state, or look at research gaps and where you'd like to fill in, or eventually develop it on a facility basis, which would be the sort of 2.0 or 3.0 version. But am I right in characterizing it as a sort of TurboTax approach?
I'm going to use that from here on out. I like that. So when you get to this, so it's all these steps, and you walk through there, you'll plug in the names of all the folks. This thing is also – it's a living tool in that you know, when it comes time after your initial document's done, 2 or 3 years down the line, or maybe even sooner if some kind of legislation is passed in your state, you need to go back and edit this document. You literally can go right back in and make the adjustments. So there's kind of the planning guide, and then you get into the actual BMP selection tool, and that literally is all the content that we've gleaned from the Florida and the New York and all the different BMP documents that have been compiled. It's all kind of behind this tool. You literally can, it's kind of a drag and drop in a sense. And you can import 100% of it. And then as you start working through that, you say, hey, salmon bearing streams. We don't have salmon bearing streams in the state we live in. And so you literally just, there's a little eye icon. You just click it and it puts an X over that icon and it will go away. And
I would imagine just that there's probably a nutrient question in there. And if a state has fertilizer restrictions like you do and we do, there's a place to add those particular regulatory aspects?
Absolutely. There are 12 major sections, IPM, nutrition, facilities, there's 12 major sections. And under the very first item under every single section, and it is actually the text is red, every single section starts with regulatory issues. And so that is where we encourage you to put your state-specific regulatory. We on the team of writers did not include all that. It would be just way too exhaustive for us to go in and figure out what every state had. And so that's where the team comes together and inserts those kinds of things. And there's two sides to that, because one of them is remember this document, it's a guiding document for the industry, but it's also a document that somebody who may not be as friendly to the golf industry, they may get a copy of this. And it's all right there at the get-go. It says, you know, here are the regulatory, and we understand as an industry, these are our regulatory constraints. Oh, and if you aren't aware of those, then let us remind you as well. So it kind of serves a dual function. Stacy Kingsbury with Kingsbury Consulting, who obviously has done a lot of work in New York and Virginia and around, she has been kind of my partner in crime on rolling all of this out. And so we actually have about half a dozen webinars that will be coming forth through GCSAA. And the first one, I believe, is Monday, March 13th. And so that is where we'll – you know, folks can sit around and just jump in and watch this live. That one is a live event where we'll take questions and answers. Some of them are not going to be live, one where we just walk through the mechanics of the tool.
Right. And I think that, listen, again, as we wrap it up here, Brian, let me say congratulations to you, your team at the University of Florida, Mark Johnson and Darren Davis leading that BMP steering committee. That was, you know, really effectively moved through the development of this thing, I would say very efficiently with the magnitude of stuff you guys worked on. Major kudos there. And even more importantly now that you're continuing to make yourself available for shows like what I'm doing here, the webinars and the other things that are so critical to getting guys hearing this from different angles so that we as an industry can start to respond to this and maybe be proactive with something before the, you know, people keep telling us the sky is falling. We don't have to keep saying that. If we do things like this, eventually people will start to recognize that we're professional land managers and you and I are pretty well-trained scientists. So this isn't just a bunch of yahoos, you know, growing grass and mowing like I think sometimes the perception of the, you know, Carl Spackler from Caddyshack demonstrates. So big thanks again, Brian. Thanks for joining me. And I hope that this continues to go well.
All right. Thanks for having me, Frank.
All right, Brian Unruh from the University of Florida, working on the BMPs with the GCSAA. I'm Frank Rossi from Cornell University, and this is Frankly Speaking, smart talk from leading thinkers.
You have been listening to Frankly Speaking with host Dr. Frank Rossi on TurfNet Radio Network. Check back for schedules on future programs. Thanks for tuning in.